Rehab Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We're going to go heavy into the Cardinals today in studio. Two of the best that follow it day by day, and that would be Kent Summers from AZ Central Sports and Mike Jarecki from Fox Sports 910. The two will be in studio with us. We will also turn our attention over on the baseball side of things with Tom Verducci, another heavyweight, longtime Sports Illustrated, SI.com baseball reporter, and also with the MLB Network. We'll talk with Tom Verducci today about all things around the Diamondbacks, the Cactus League, and much, much more. The sports side of things today. So I know today is a voting day in Arizona, and I know the Brussels bombing happened, and you guys want the escape, as do I. March Madness, I'm not willing to turn the page yet and start looking towards the Sweet 16 games. I'll do that tomorrow. I think we'll go further into that tomorrow. I kind of got my eye on Kobe here tomorrow night. So the Suns play the Lakers tomorrow night. It is supposed to be Kobe Bryant's final game in Phoenix. And I say supposed to because I don't know if he's going to play. The Lakers play tonight. Kobe missed the game in L.A. on Friday. And playing back-to-backs with Kobe, that doesn't happen very often. I would hope that he's held out tonight and plays tomorrow. It would really not be good if you consider the history of the Lakers and Suns. For Kobe to miss playing in Phoenix, I know it's not the biggest game in the world. I know that playing against the Knicks or playing against the Bulls or playing against LeBron or playing against Boston, I know there's a lot of history and tradition and heritage there, but there was a lot of history and tradition in playing against the Suns for years and years and years. And so I'm looking at tomorrow night, downtown Phoenix, and what do the Suns do in the way of honoring Kobe Bryant? What does this organization do? The Suns, for years and years, when players would come through and it would be their final time rolling through, the Suns would have a way of showing respect, whether it was the public address announcer, it could have been Jeff Munn or Jeff Scott or Kip Helt, giving that pregnant pause towards the name of the person being introduced out on the court for the final time, whether it's David Robinson or Karl Malone or Gary Payton, guys that you hated on one hand, but that entertained you and thrilled you for years and years and years. So I'm looking at that towards tomorrow night. The NFL meetings are going on down in Florida, and they are of interest to me because there's so much conversation about, again, changing the rules. And some of the rules that they're talking about changing, what is a catch, what is not a catch, when is an official allowed to throw a flag for vulgarity used out in the football field, and how that kind of goes against the game, in my opinion. And I mean it like this. There are slurs that are used in games. Doesn't mean that they're right. But there's language that is spoken by different ethnicities when they're in the heat of battle, in my opinion. A guy can drop an N-word and it can be extremely offensive to a lot of people. It can be extremely offensive. I find it very offensive. But when you're playing football and that term is dropped in or thrown around from player to player of the same race, is it a complimentary term? I don't know. But that a flag being thrown on that, a fine for that, you know, you got to look at how far can an official go. And that's one of the debates that's going on down at the league meetings. And so that one is a little bit of a concern for me. You know, Bruce Arians said something interesting yesterday. He was interviewed at the owners' meetings. He said, it's not a good year if you don't win the Super Bowl. It's not a good year if you don't win the Super Bowl. It's a very high bar. That means the Cardinals have never had a good year, ever. They've gotten to a Super Bowl, but according to Bruce Arians, it's not a good year if you don't win the Super Bowl. And I subscribe to that theory to a point. I don't think that you pile on players and say, man, you guys blew. You only made it to the NFC title game. Maybe I should have a higher expectation of that. It was pretty clear to me that the Carolina Panthers were a better football team top to bottom than the Arizona Cardinals were. I don't think if they played them 10 times that they'd split it 50-50. So Bruce Arians throws that down. It's not a good year if you don't win the Super Bowl, and directs it, I think, directly at his team that, look, We got a lot of work to do here in the off season. I'm going to talk to Kent Summers, Mike Jarecki here in a few minutes about that, and to go in depth on the organization and what they've done here in the off season, the NFL draft, much, much more with the Cardinals. They usually don't go so heavy Cardinals. They usually go around the NFL, but these two, I want to go straight to them on that front. The goofy CEO of the tennis tournament in Indian Wells that we talked to Paula about yesterday, and I'm sure you saw it. It was a lead national story yesterday. It was in the news cycle for about 24 hours. We're not surprised that this guy resigned, saying that women ride on men's coattails and that women should get down on their knees every night to thank the guys that were there before them. You can't script this stuff in sports. I mean, you just can't. So, of course, yesterday as we're doing the show, there was the obligatory, I didn't mean to say what I said, which is some PR weasel sitting in a, I don't know, corner cubicle saying, please write a damage control press release for this dope out in this tennis tournament that we should not have on the face of the planet, this guy representing us. So by yesterday afternoon, he resigned. He's out. I don't know if it's going to change anything over there, but it's interesting these types of people are in the positions that they get into. The Diamondbacks last night. So what do we make out? Eric, did you see where the Diamondbacks are 17-4? Their record 17-4.
I did see that. Sort of following it from a distance.
Should I be thinking anything about that?
No. No.
17-4. They have the best record, like, in the major leagues. You're not going to make anything out of it.
No, because I've seen the Browns go 4-0 and 5-0 in preseason. And it just doesn't – it's practice baseball. It doesn't – the starters are going three innings, and it's just practice baseball.
So if they were 4-17, would you be saying, boy, these guys are not going to be good this year?
No.
Would you have the same approach? I have to think there's something positive about this.
It's just practice baseball. That's all it is.
Just practice baseball at major league prices, regular season.
I mean, and
prices.
Some of these games are like split squads. So, I mean, what do you really – it's
– But when Pat Corbin strikes out 7 last night –
It's encouraging. There are certain storylines that I like to watch, and he is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Like we talked about last week, like, oh my gosh, Zach Greinke gave up 3 runs in 1 inning.
Yeah,
it's fine. Just go to sleep and rest easy.
Yeah, breathe.
He's going to win, you know, 18 to 21 games.
He's not bad.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
He's not bad.
He's going to be all right.
They sent Archie Bradley down to the minor leagues yesterday.
That was a little bit disappointing, but not surprising.
Well, I really think that there's something to Archie Bradley maybe giving a vibe last year with this ownership, when I say ownership, this management group of La Russa and Dave Stewart. I think there was something there that I'm Archie Bradley. Yeah, he took the ball off the face. Does he need that much more time? Do they want to see if he's tough enough?
The last time he threw, the game was, I believe, on MLB Network or maybe on Fox Sports Arizona, and they kept cutting away to the box and showing La Russa, and he didn't look happy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was missing the strike zone, and he was erratic, and there were a couple times where he tried to lay down a bunt to get the guy across and couldn't do it, and you could just sort of – you could feel the heat coming out of that booth where La Russa and the rest of the brain trust were
So it was the little things he wasn't doing.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm fine with this. It's not like they need him to start out the season.
Yeah, probably Robbie Ray is going to get that 5th starting spot, I would guess.
Right. The March Madness side of it, the coaching carousel is going on. So Herb Sendek's name surfaced at Santa Clara, and he interviewed at Santa Clara. We have nothing negative to say about Herb other than he couldn't win at Arizona State, but there's a lot of coaches that couldn't win at Arizona State. So it's fine. I think that Santa Clara is perfect for Herb Sendek. I think that he is a Ivy League, West Coast Conference type of coach. He doesn't – for him to go sit in gyms – and compete against these basketball factories for one-and-done guys, I don't think that's him. If it's going to a place of academia, I know that that ASU is trying to say, you know, we're the top academic school. You're in the Pac-12. You're trying to win games against schools like Oregon, okay? You can't compete and have that same. It's like why Johnny Dawkins got blown out at Stanford. Like, I couldn't see Herb going to Stanford. I could not see that. But I could definitely see him at Santa Clara. And then there's this leap. I know that Pitt came open. Pitt hired Eric's coach You know, Eric's all excited because TCU basketball is finally going to get over the top.
Yay!
Are you happy with this
hire? Two decades of irrelevance may finally be over.
Are you happy
with this hire? Of course. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you go to take a coach away from Pitt, mm-hmm. who's been there forever, to go to TCU.
And he is a TCU alum, so I think that... And he played at TCU. He's one of
Jamie Dixon we're talking about.
Yeah, he's one of the little tiny handful of good players that have ever come out of that program.
But so now Pitt is open, and there's this stretch of... Well, Sean Miller went to school at Pitt. Sean Miller was very popular at Pitt. He was.
Those are both true.
Those are both true. And so Sean Miller is going to look at Pitt.
There you go.
That's not true. I can't imagine that he would say, boy, going from Tucson to Pitt or going just to that athletic department. That athletic department is dysfunctional. You know, they've run through how many football coaches? I can't see that happening, but there are those that, and there's a handful. I won't say there's a lot. There is a handful of those that are starting to grow weary that Sean Miller can't get his team further in March Madness. Guess what? He's not Lute, okay? And U of A is not UCLA. It's not. So deal with it and be happy with what you have. Okay, up next, Kent Summers, Mike Jarecki in studio talking about the Arizona Cardinals. We'll do that. AZ Central Cardinal Insider Kent Summers, Fox Sports 910, Mike Jarecki. All things Cardinals, that's next. Then Tom Verducci. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
All right, let us shift gears because the NFL never stops, especially when the Arizona Cardinals have such a terrific run as they did last season. The two guys that follow them inside the most, the Bird's Eye View podcast that you can see on AZ Central with Kent Summers and Mike Jarecki from Extra Sports 910. They are in studio with us to give us all the stuff back and forth. Is the team today better than the team that walked off the field losing to Carolina?
I think so. Just the addition of Chandler Jones gives them a pass rusher and somebody they didn't have for a long time. Really, 1 year with John Abraham was sort of that guy. But this is a pass rusher that can play every down, young, 26 years old. I think he makes them instantly better.
Yeah, I would agree. And also the addition of Evan Mathis, just adding a tough guy to the offensive line. But anytime you can get a pass rusher 26 years old. Now, he's only under contract one more year. Cardinals will likely franchise him for the next year. So we're going to see a little bit maybe different defense this year where they can rush four, drop seven back into coverage. It's going to give James Betcher a lot of different options where they don't have to blitz every down. And sometimes when you over blitz like they did in the postseason, possibly you get beat by it. So I think it's a great addition. We'll have to wait and see how long he's going to be here.
It's funny, guys, because I was getting the why aren't they doing anything? And you typically in free agency, you do something to make up for mistakes you made in the past. And there's still some spots on the roster that I look at and say, well, they're not quite there yet. These were two moves of two guys that have rings. How important is that within this locker room to have guys that have won it all to show that this is how it can be done?
I think that was already there. I really do in the Cardinals locker room. I think that maturity, you know, with guys like Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer and you know, Rashad Johnson last year. I mean, he's now an unrestricted free agent. But I think that was there. I think the key thing is adding the right kind of people to that mix and not bringing anybody in who's going to ruin that chemistry. You know, Evan Mathis is a bright guy who has fit in everywhere. I think the concern, and Chandler Jones seems that way too. The concern with him is the January incident when he shows up at a police station shirtless and, you know, has no idea what's going on and where he is. Was that a one-time thing in his life and a mistake, as he says it is, or is it, you know, a flare that there's going to be problems in the future?
And normally you don't see a guy like Bill Belichick trade good players. Now, there's a history with Logan Mankins and Richard Seymour and Randy Moss where their contracts are going to expire the following season, so he gets draft picks. But I wonder if this was just a football decision or they just wanted to wash their hands from Chandler Jones. Again, from the Cardinals' perspective, I think he'll bring energy to that locker room. Obviously, he has experience. He has postseason experience. That's something that obviously they weren't able to get to the quarterback. So I don't know so much about the rings, but the fact that they played in the playoffs, they know what it takes to get to the championship game. The Cardinals need that to get over the hump. And then Evan Mathis, you know, he's probably one of the smartest guys in the room. And, you know, he's one of those guys where he'll ask a question knowing the answer, but he hopes the guys next to him figure it out. DJ Humphreys and likely a new center. So he'll be the guy that leads his charge when it comes to the offensive line.
Talking to people in New England, people who know Chandler Jones and Belichick, they thought it was all about money. They've got a series of like five young players they have to re-sign within the next year. Chandler Jones, this was a way to cut almost $8 million off their cap. It's in a position where they have depth. That's why they traded him, not because of the incident.
Right. I mean, this just doesn't happen when you have somebody of that caliber.
You think about the way the Cardinals have built this team at key positions. Mm-hmm. They were able to get Carson Palmer for basically nothing. They were able to fill left tackle Jared Valdir because Oakland didn't franchise him. Looked like a lot of money a couple years ago with the cap going up. That's a very reasonable deal. And now you're able to get a pass rusher, 26-year-old pass rusher. And, yeah, you have to re-sign him. But if he's everything they think he's going to be, you'll gladly write him that check.
I mean, you take a look at it. The four most important positions on a football team, quarterback, late-round pick, left tackle, who the Raiders did not franchise. They valued him as a right tackle. Cardinals got a steal there. And then obviously pass rusher, which they have for the next 2 years under contract. And then you throw in Patrick Peterson, who this new regime extended. So you start looking at the four most important positions on any football team, quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, corner. They have checked those boxes.
Let me throw some names at you guys and just give me your view. What's going to happen with Michael Floyd in an Arizona Cardinal uniform?
I believe the Cardinals will try to extend him at some point this year. It could drag off into the offseason. They could put him on the franchise tag, but we know that's going to go to Chandler Jones. Considering that Larry Fitzgerald's in the final year of his contract, they would like to lower Michael's cap number from 7.3. So I think he's part of the future, and it wouldn't surprise me if he gets an extension at some point during the season.
I agree with that. I don't think they want to, spend crazy money on Michael Floyd.
Is he worth it?
I think he is. In that, as Mike said, Fitz will probably be gone next year. They're still, even when Fitz is gone, they're taking like a $9 or $10 million cap hit mm-hmm. when he's gone. So, I think they'll extend him. I think he's starting. You can see the growth. You can see the progress. I think. Bruce Arians is given to exaggerations and bold statements, but I do think he was right that Floyd was on track for a huge year if he hadn't had those dislocated fingers in camp.
Okay, so Fitz, we've known each other for a long time. Feels like Fitz we've known for about as long a time. This is the year we're throwing dirt on Larry, that this is it, that we're going to bury Fitz after this year, come hell or high water, Kent. Do you think this is it?
I'm leaning toward that this is going to be it. Not because he can't play anymore, not because he can't be productive anymore. Just reading between the lines, I get the feeling that, at age 33, which he'll be next season, he's ready to go on and do other things. It's become a physical and a mental grind. It would not surprise me at all if he walks away, after this year. It's the last year of his deal. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he wants to go anywhere else and play. The Cardinals certainly don't want Larry Fitzgerald to end his career anywhere else, and it'll, but that's how I'm leaning. It could change. Like somebody said during the Peyton Manning retirement, it's easy to talk about how I'm going to retire, but when you actually have to pick up the phone and make that call or have that press conference, that's the biggest step. It's not an easy one to take, but I think this is it for him.
When he sat down with Michael Bidwell, it was a two-year deal. I think Larry wanted a two-year deal. He didn't want a one-year deal because he wanted to play a couple more years. I understand if they're knocking on the door again for a championship, would he consider it? I just think his mind is made up, and now we'll see what kind of numbers he puts up. Hopefully they go out on a top right here, but I don't see him coming back next year. It just seems like I think he knows when the end is coming, and he wants to finish on a strong note. I think he's got Hall of Fame numbers right now, so it would be a surprise if he decided to play another year.
Okay, Tyrann Mathieu's knee, concern to you?
No, I think he's going to be fine bouncing back. I think going forward, the concern is this a guy that has trouble staying away from injuries? Is mm-hmm. it because of the way he plays and his size or anything? Granted, his two knee injuries have been freakish, but, at some point you've got to stay on the field for an entire season. I don't know. I've never understood the big rush, and I don't think there is one from the Cardinals to re-sign him, to give him a deal sometime this spring or even this summer. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Cardinals, if I'm Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell, I say, I love the kid, but I want to see him come back on the field before I extend him and give him a contract that's going to make him the face of the franchise.
Similar to Andre Ellington.
Yeah.
He can't stay on the field. And you have something on Matthew, or do you want to go over to
Ellington? Well, just on Matthew. I mean, it looked like the Cardinals they're building around Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, and I think for the next couple of years, Chandler Jones. And how much money can you tap in that secondary? I'm with Kent. What's the rush? I mean, clearly you're going to put the tag on Jones next year. So the way he plays, that was a non-contact injury. He probably shouldn't have been in the game at that point in Philadelphia. It happens. But to me, the way the league is going now, when you're going to have six and seven DBs possibly on the field at the same time, he gives them another dimension. He's really good close to the line of scrimmage. He's a ball hawk. So I think he's worthy of a contract extension, but I don't know what the hurry is at this point in time.
When they see that he's healthy and he gets that extension, when Larry Fitzgerald's gone, Tyrann Mathieu is the face of this
no
franchise.
Question.
Oh, he's a fan favorite.
It's not Patrick Peterson. No. It's not Calais Campbell. It's Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah.
The passion he plays with, the charisma that he has. He's the guy that's going to be the heart of that team.
The entire story. People root for this guy. I mean, what he's overcome and how he's been obviously a good soldier in that locker room. I mean, the players really love that guy.
Okay, quick thought, 30 seconds in this segment. Andre Ellington, what happens?
He'll play out this season, make $1.6 million, have a nice little paycheck, and make or break for him. I mean, another injury, miss some games. This will be his last season in Arizona. They love his talent. They love what, you know, Bruce Arians would love to game plan and have a couple of things in the book for Andre Ellington, but he's proved you can't count on him. He has to prove you can count on him.
I mean, it's good depth. I mean, obviously, we're signing Chris Johnson, so I still think he's a weapon. He's just got to stay healthy, and maybe sometimes you just got to play through things mind-wise, but they feel like he can help him in the passing game, you know. But I just think it's more depth at this point. If he doesn't put up big numbers, he will not be here next year.
Okay, on the other side, we're going to change gears, and we're going to shift over to the quarterback, not just in 2016, but beyond that. And also a little bit more on the concussion front. Bruce Arians said it's not a good year if you don't win the Super Bowl. Said that at the NFL meetings down in Florida. We're going to get into that as well. And also the Cardinals going digital with this Amazon show. Whatever happened to this organization being so standoffish, now they're embracing it. We'll talk about that on the other side with Kent Summers and Mike Jarecki. I'm Brad Sussmat. Brad Sussmat's Football AZ continues. Summers from AZ Central, the two guys that know the Cardinals inside and out. Bird's Eye View podcast. You can check it out on AZ Central. It comes out tomorrow. New one. It will be on board. The quarterback situation. Last time we chatted by phone, I think after the combine, that was not something that was on the top of your list. I don't want to put words in your mouth. As you sit here and look at their roster now, they re-signed Drew Stanton. Quarterback seems solid for the coming year. What's Carson Palmer going to be like this coming year? Same guy? Or did we see some cracks at the end of the season?
I think he's going to be the same guy in the regular season. If he's healthy, why wouldn't he be the same guy? They've got some questions on the offensive line, but I think they'll be okay there. Running back, they're deeper. He still has all those weapons at receiver. If I'm drafting in a fantasy league, I take him high. He's going to put up numbers. The whole thing with him, people are going to say, look at him in season, say, okay, yeah, so what? What do you look like in January? Show me that. And there's nothing he can do about that from September to December.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think this is going to fuel him, but we're going to judge him on what he does in the postseason. So, you know, the Cardinals will be likely favorites with the Seahawks to win the West. I think it's important you win the division. Mm-hmm. But I think it's difficult to go play three road playoff games if they get in as a wild card, and that would make it a lot more difficult for him. But I think this is going to fuel him. But at the same time, I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket with Carson Palmer. You go out and you get, you know, Evan Mathis. You got Mikey Potty. You got Jared Valdir. This team ran the ball close to 2,000 yards last year.
They'll have a new center, too, this year.
They'll have a young center, likely. Yeah. Could be a draft pick maybe in the first or third round. But they ran for close to 2,000 yards, 16 touchdowns, averaging about 112 yards on the ground. Well, if they get a lead in the fourth quarter this year, I'd like to see Palmer come out of the game and just run the football, whether it's Chris Johnson or Andre Ellington or David Johnson. So I just don't want to see the Cardinals put all their eggs in one basket, and I think that will help him in the postseason leading him forward.
And you like the decision on Stanton?
Yeah, I mean, I think in what the market was, I think it was the best one they could make. You have somebody who's spent more time in Bruce Arians' system than anybody else, probably playing in the league right now. He understands it. He's a great backup. He does a lot of things on the sideline that help this team, both in terms of talking to Carson and suggesting plays to Arians. He's a guy who's proven he can come in. You don't want him starting 10 to 16 games, but if he has to start 6 to 8, if the other parts of your football team are holding up, he can win enough games to keep you in the hunt. And you look around the league, who are the really good backup quarterbacks?
That's
who,
true.
You know, there's a vacuum there. So
there's not a lot of good starting quarterbacks by the end of the season. Sure. It's who are these guys?
And they haven't been able to go out and add a young guy yet to find that young guy. So, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of options. And you know, it was a nice marriage between both parties. They needed each other.
I think it's a great security blanket. I mean, if something happens to Palmer, he was 5-3 2 years ago. They don't make the playoffs without him coming in. I just think it's really security for them if something ever happens to Carson Palmer, because it would change the offense, but he's capable of winning football games.
Okay, biggest concern you have then about this team? Offseason is about halfway over. You have the draft coming up next month. What is your biggest concern?
Biggest concern would be, how is it going to shake out in the secondary? You possibly could lose Rashard Johnson, who I think is the brains of the defense. He could come back on a one-year deal at this point. And also, who's going to play opposite of Patrick Peterson? Right now, on paper, you got Justin Bethel. It wouldn't surprise me if the Cardinals drafted a corner at some point in the draft. They could still go out and sign a free agent. So, defensively, you're going to have some different faces in that secondary. And to me, that was their strength last year on defense.
You?
I think right there with it is what the offensive line is going to look like from the center to the right. Mm-hmm. You know, Evan Mathis, I think, was a nice addition, but you don't have a center right now unless. You know, they say they have great faith in A.Q. Shipley, but they brought in Lyle Sinline in, August last year after they saw Shipley an extended amount of time. So you could have a young center. And is D.J. Humphreys ready to step in at right tackle? I don't buy what Arians was saying, that he saw a tremendous growth in D.J. Humphreys as a player during the regular season. I don't get how a kid grows when spends all of his time running the other team's offense on the scout team. Mm. I don't know that an offensive lineman gets better during the regular season. If they don't see something from him in OTAs, what do they do? Who's the right tackle? Who jumps in if D.J. Humphreys fails?
The draft, if it were held today, they take, I'm not going to ask for a player, they keep that first-round pick. What position?
I think they could go center or corner.
You may have a player, but...
Yeah, I mean, I just think if you watch what Steve Keim has done in the last 3 years, whatever they don't get in free agency, they have a tendency to look for in the draft. Now, they'll sit there and tell you, we're going to go best available player, but it also has to have some need in it. Clearly, pass rusher was the number one need going into the offseason. Right. They have checked that box. They have a need at center. They have a need at corner, and I anticipate at some point they're going to have to address those positions.
I agree with that. Center, corner. A quarterback wouldn't surprise me if there's somebody who drops. I don't know what they think of a Paxton Lynch or somebody like that if he drops. I wouldn't rule out an inside linebacker. If they think there's a real athletic guy in I don't even want to mention his name, Darryl Washington mode,
What's new with Darryl Washington?
That's for the
He's
next
not
segment.
Coming
that's,
back.
That's a whole half
that's
hour.
That's the next segment. Right. I'll say this, though.
That's an eight-hour documentary.
Right.
I am hearing
it's for Amazon Prime.
I am hearing the Cardinals could have some interest in Cardale Jones.
Oh, wow.
Would they draft him in the third or fourth round?
Yeah.
Kind of like Ben Roethlisberger, small sample, didn't play a ton in college, can play in the pocket, very athletic, strong arm. It'd be interesting to see if they were able to develop him if they draft him.
Okay, so it came out earlier this week, and we'll finish on this, that the Cardinals are going to release a video that will be only on Amazon, right?
Yes.
And we see the release, and we're reading through this. I'm reading through this at least and saying, this team? this team's finally
all for nothing, Brad.
Accepting the digital. They're going to open all at this team. Were you surprised?
Not really. I mean, under Michael Bidwell, they've progressed a lot. If his dad was still in charge, you know, I don't know. His dad might say, "We're going to play in the Amazon. What's going on?" But I'm surprised. What surprised me a little bit, given that Bruce Arians has always said, "I'm not a hard knocks guy. I don't want to do that," and that they let cameras in behind the scenes. I guess the difference is they're showing things that already happened, not like Hard Knocks where you're watching it a week later. I guess that's the difference. I didn't know that Arians would give somebody that kind of access for that extended amount of time. I think it's going to be fascinating.
Oh, listen, during the season, we were like, why is NFL Films out here so much? No one really said anything.
Yeah, no one would tell.
But they were out there every single day, and then you find out they had cameras in meeting rooms. They also had a camera in the draft day when conversations were going on, and they were not in there, but they had a remote control that they can control these cameras. So, yeah, they had cameras in the room, but it wasn't a distraction. I think that's where Arian signed off.
It could be a big drinking game at home with how many F-bombs are dropped every time.
No, that's true.
You know, with this,
but I think it'd be fascinating to see stuff behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we see a lot now, there's even more to it.
If they put good stuff in there, because the fact that it's already happened means the organization can sit there and see this rough cut and say, that's not in, that's not in, that's not in.
Yeah, it'd be
how edgy is it going to be?
But we're talking about an entire season jam-packed in 8 hours.
Right.
And I will say this, over the 3 years, either no one has or no one's been able to rein Bruce Arians in as far as speaking his mind. And I don't know that anybody goes to Bruce Arians and say, yeah, maybe you really shouldn't say that or you should. So I think they're kind of fine with it. They've sort of embraced this culture. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Bidwell has like, hey, this is who we're going to be, who we are. They've adopted the coach's personality to a certain extent.
Good stuff, guys. Thanks for coming in, as always.
Thanks,
Ken
Brad.
Summers, Mike Jarecki. Bird's Eye View podcast that you can find on AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the two of them coming on in. And we're back with more after this timeout. Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ continues after this timeout. Let's talk baseball now for a couple of minutes. Tom Verducci, Emmy Award winner, Sports Illustrated, SI.com with Brad Sussmatz, all things around not just the Cactus League, but also the Grapefruit Circuit and around baseball as well. If I had told you back at the start of spring training, Tom, that Bryce Harper and Goose Gossage would be pushing the NFL and the NBA off to the margins in terms of conversation nationally about the sport, would you have bought into that? And just what do you make out of the whole thing?
Yeah, I would not have bet on that. And it really shows you that there's a culture clash going on in baseball, old school, new school. There's no question about it. I think it is kind of an awkward time in baseball, and that the way guys play the game has changed. I think it's for the better, to be honest with you. The more emotion we get to see in a game, I think is better. I wouldn't go as far as to condone guys who try to show up the opponent, you know, really stick it in their face or come up with some of these antics that are geared towards antagonizing the other team. But to flip a bat after you hit a home run, to show emotion after you strike somebody out, I think it's a great thing. And I think the game is moving in that direction, and the people who grew up with a different game are having a very difficult time with it. And I think we're going to continue to have some of these, let's call them disagreements, if you will. But I actually think the emotion is good for the game.
I think in looking at both sides of this, does Gossage have a point in that these kids, or Bryce Harper, has never been part of a strike? Sure, he has a point there. Does Goose Gossage sound like get off my lawn guy? Yeah, he does. Does Bryce Harper have a point that baseball is tired? It's a tired sport. I don't know if myself would go that far. I'm a 50-year-old male who's seen the game through the years. But for my kids who are 23, 24, I think they would agree with Bryce Harper. I think both sides here have some validity.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people seem to just say it's an either-or proposition, where we let everything go or we get back to showing no emotions. And obviously, it's not the case in the real world.
Right.
But I do think you're right. They both have points to it. Again, I think there's a line here. You just can't say, hey, guys, do whatever you want. You're actually going to get people hurt that way, because that pitcher still has the baseball in his hand. And that kind of culture in the game, and I know it's diminished in terms of taking care of things between the lines, it still happens. It still goes on from time to time. But I think it's important, actually, that we do have these conversations, because I don't want to see a game where it becomes a game of, you know, can you top this? Who can have the most outrageous bat flip? You know, who can call the most attention to themselves? Who can anger the other team the most? I don't want to see that. I just want to see guys playing really hard, and when they do something well, get excited about it.
Tom, is there another player that could have been the lightning rod, though, in the game that it is today? Mike Trout would not say these types of things. I don't know if there's another player that could force the dialogue like we've had here in the last few weeks.
Well, not to this extent, no. I mean, it's very rare that a baseball player gets to the major leagues and he's a known commodity before he plays his first game. You know, it's not college football or college basketball, or we know these guys as amateurs and they're established stars once they step on a pro field. But Bryce was a kid since he was 16 years old, so you're right. But, you know, we've had this conversation with guys like Jose Bautista after the bat flip last year, the playoffs against Texas. It's come up from time to time, but in terms of gaining national attention, you know, Bryce, let's face it, is one of the few guys, I don't know how many there are, I want to say maybe three or four at the most, who could actually walk down basically any street in this country out of uniform and people would know who he is. I'm talking about either a casual fan or someone who's not even a baseball fan, just has a passing interest in the game. So he does have that attention factor, the known quantity factor that a lot of guys don't. That they speak out, it kind of gets lost. But this obviously roped in a lot of people under the tent who might not necessarily have been baseball fans.
Tom Verducci, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, Emmy Award winner with Brad Sussmat. If you were to explain to fans what Bryce Harper is all about and how he's wired, does he respect the game? Fans may not know that. They just may look at a quote and say, well, this kid doesn't have any idea. You probably know him better than most, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I was the one who went out there and saw him as a high schooler or a sophomore and put him on the cover of SI. So what I found is the same kid I see today. And I say kid, I mean, obviously he's a grown man, but in baseball sense, he's still very young. Someone who's really in love with the game. I mean, this kid eats, breathes, sleeps baseball. He knows a lot about the history of the game. You know, he was someone who grew up, you know, reading and admiring people like Pete Rose and Mickey Mantle and the greats who, you know, were done playing by the time he even followed the game. He works really hard at the game, and I think last year you saw a lot more maturity in his game. You know, the MVP, yeah, that was great to see all the power and all that. But he was a guy who figured out at an early age that it's more important to be really selective than to be hyper-aggressive, which he was his first 3 years in the league. He took a leap forward last year in maturity as a baseball player, and he's still just 23 years old. So, you know, I think this guy wants to be an ambassador for a game. I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, baseball traditionally has been a sport that tamps down individualism. You know, don't call too much attention to yourself. But at the same time, in today's day and age, we have people saying, hey, baseball doesn't promote its stars enough like the NBA does, like the NFL does. The NFL and the NBA are star-driven sports, so I don't think it's a bad thing at all if you have someone who does want to be the center of attention and still wants to win.
One last question on this topic, and that is, if you were to go into locker rooms as you do, do players say he's right or do players roll their eyes?
Oh, he polarizes even the players. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's some people who do think he's right. Some people who have not played with Bryce Harper, basically he rubs them the wrong way. And I tell Bryce this too. I think it's because he plays the game too hard. And I say that in a half-joking way. But he does play the game very hard, and sometimes the other team just doesn't like to see that kind of hustle and energy on the field. So I do think it's a case where if you play with a guy, you understand that his heart's in the right place. If you see him, you know, maybe a few series a year, maybe there's some things that he does that you don't like. And again, if you're an older school guy where it's all about, you know, not creating any attention for yourself, you're not going to like him. But I know this, when he comes to the plate, you know, if you're a Nationals fan or not, you want to see what happens. And that, I think, is good for the game.
A couple other questions before we let Tom Verducci go. Here in the Cactus League, any reason in your mind that the Royals cannot repeat?
No, there's not, other than the fact that it's just so hard to do historically.
Right.
You know, it's going back to those Yankee teams, it hasn't been done. But other than that, no, because this is a team that, you know, the word culture is overused a lot in sports, but I look at what Kansas City has now, and they have a well-defined, well-established culture. They know exactly who they are. That is not a star-driven team. That is a team driven by athleticism, by defense, by an incredible bullpen. And, you know, the best players on the team, people like Alex Gordon and Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, they've been playing together a really long time. And in this day and age, you don't see a whole lot of that. So they have that undefiable or unquantifiable thing we call chemistry. And, yeah, I think the way they play baseball is something that's sustainable. In a game where we have a ton of strikeouts, they put the ball in play. In a game where specialized relief pitching has become more and more important, they probably have the deepest bullpen in all of baseball. So they have things, I think, that really play well, not just in the regular season, but especially in the postseason. And you've seen that the last 2 years. They've been 23-8 in the postseason the last 2 years. That's not a mirage. I know Billy Bean says the playoffs are a crapshoot, but I just like the way this team plays baseball, especially when they go up against really good pitching because they do put the ball in play. So, yeah, listen, I think the only thing holding them back from saying no, they can't win is just that it's so darn hard based on recent history.
Over at Texas, AL West title a year ago, any reason to believe they can't do that?
I'm glad you brought them up because I think Texas is a team that is one of the strongest teams in the American League. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw an ALCS of Texas and Kansas City, or I'll throw Houston in there as well, which is a ton of talent. But Texas should be getting Yu Darvish back in the middle to late part of May. And that's a pretty dynamic 1-2 combination when you've got Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, and they have a lot of offense. And I think the key for me looking at Texas as I went through their camp is they have a lot of really good, I don't even want to call them prospects, but young players who may not be in the starting lineup as we stand here today, but will get folded in as we go throughout the season, whether that's a Joey Gallo or a Nomar Mazara or a Jerickson Profar who's trying to get healthy for the first time in 3 years. They have really good young players that will contribute to this team. And you're going to need it in the course of the season, but these are not just complimentary players. These people can be dynamic impact players. So I like the depth that they have heading into the season.
Two other teams, I'll let you go. Cubs.
Really impressed with the Cubs last year, but actually even more so this year. It's a very confident team. The fact that guys like Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, Addison Russell, young players all got not just experience, but meaningful game experience in a pennant race and then in the postseason. I really like that about this team. They have a lot of guys who are just getting into their best years. I think it's going to be a very dynamic offensive team. And John Lackey, I think, was a great sign for them as a solid number three in that rotation. Yeah, he's got some age on him, but he's actually been better the last few years after Tommy John's surgery. So to me, there's nothing not to like about the Cubs. I look at their roster, and if you could give me the pick of any of the 30 rosters right now, I'm talking about 1 through 40, I would take the Cubs. Mm. I think they're a team that should win about 95 games, maybe some more. But on paper, I think going in, they have the best team in baseball.
Lastly, what do you make out of what's going on out here in Arizona with the Diamondbacks? You put all the money into Greinke. You have these Hall of Famers throughout their organization, from La Russa to Randy Johnson to many, many others that are helping out with the team. What do you make out of what's going on here in Arizona?
Well, I'll go back to what I said about Kansas City, where they have an established culture. The D-backs are trying to establish their culture. You can't get it until you have some stability. You know, the manager, Chappelle, there for a second year now and extended now. The way they play is admirable because of really Paul Goldschmidt sets the tone. He's such a hardworking, humble player. Now they have to just have some success on their side to really cement that kind of culture. Can they do it? You know, on paper, I think the D-backs are probably about an 85, 86 win team that puts them right in the wild card mix. So their season may come down to, you know, are there a couple of position players, whether it's a Jake Lamb or a Yasmani Tomas or David Peralta, who really break through with bigger seasons? Or, like we saw the Mets and the Jays do last year, do they really tweak that team and make significant changes at the trade deadline to get them into that upper 80 area where you need to get to be a postseason team, to be at least a wild card team? They've got a lot in their favor. I think going in, though, it's a very tough division. There's no question about it. You know, I talked with one other general manager who said they're an interesting team because it's a team of stars and scrubs. And by that, he meant that there's not a lot of depth, very top heavy with people like Goldschmidt, Pollock, Greinke, Corbin. But beyond that, their depth will be challenged throughout the season. But if they, as I said, if they have the answers within the roster with some of those young hitters, then yeah, I think they can be a postseason team. But right now, I'd say they're right in the mix, a little bit short of postseason.
Thank you for the time and the insight. Great stuff, Tom, as always.
You got it. Thank you.
Tom Verducci there, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, Emmy Award winner on storylines around the Cactus League, and also terrific stuff there on Bryce Harper and Goose Gossage. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.